It's 6 hours Universe time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Tommy McNeil reporting. U.S. President Donald Trump Tuesday issued a stark warning to North Korea.
He has been very threatening beyond a normal statement. And as I said, they will be met with fire, fury, and frankly, power, the likes of which this world has never seen before.
Mr. Trump told reporters North Korean leader Kim Jong-un has been acting this way since the U.S. increased its sanctions against the reclusive communist state and won a unanimous vote by the U.N. Security Council to impose penalties on Pyongyang. NATO is sharply criticizing Russian President Vladimir Putin's visit to the breakaway Georgian region of Abkhazia Tuesday, the ninth anniversary of the brief war over another renegade Georgian territory. NATO spokesman Dylan White calls Putin's visit detrimental to international efforts to find a peaceful negotiated settlement. White said NATO is united in full support for the sovereignty and territorial integrity of Georgia within its internationally recognized borders. Putin met with the leader, reaffirming Moscow's guarantee to protect what Putin calls Abkhazia's security, self-sufficiency, and independence. South Africa's embattled president, Jacob Zuma, has narrowly survived an eighth attempt by Parliament to unseat him in a vote of no confidence. After nearly 5 hours of debate, voting, and counting, 198 of the 384 members present voted against the opposition's motion to oust the president, while 177 voted for him to step down. The motion needed 201 votes to pass. 9 members abstained from voting during the secret ballot. This is VOA News. Venezuela's new Constitutional Assembly took over the halls of the endangered opposition-controlled Congress Tuesday, issuing a decree declaring itself superior to all other branches of government. VOA's Mary Mata reports.
The order bars anti-government lawmakers in Congress from taking any action that would interfere with the laws passed by the newly installed assembly. Delcy Rodriguez, the superbody's leader, declared to unanimous approval. Embattled President Nicolas Maduro convoked the Constitutional Assembly in what he contends is an attempt to resolve the nation's political standoff. But opposition leaders insist it is a power grab.
The critical vote counting state has begun in Kenya's presidential election, a contest between two long-standing political dynasties in a country with a history of post-election violence. President Uhuru Kenyatta was leading with 55% of the vote to challenger Raila Odinga's 44% when the Election Commission released early preliminary results Tuesday. But that estimate was made with less than a quarter of the country's nearly 41,000 polling stations counted. Election officials have up to a week to announce full results, but they may opt to announce the outcome as soon as possible to alleviate the possibility of violence. A 6.5 magnitude earthquake struck the remote and mountainous Sichuan province of China Tuesday night, as a geological survey reports. Up to 100 people were feared dead and thousands more injured in that quake. At least 4 people have been confirmed dead, 30 injured so far. The epicenter of the quake was in a sparsely populated area, mostly by Tibetans, many of whom are nomadic herders near a well-known national park. The U.S. State Department is advising its diplomats to sidestep questions from foreign governments about the Trump administration's plan on the Paris climate deal. Reuters news agency reported Tuesday that it was sent to U.S. embassies on Friday by Secretary of State Rex Tillerson, and it provides prospective questions foreign government officials could ask diplomats and suggest answers. American country and Western singer Glen Campbell, whose appearances on television, movies, and the pop charts made him one of the country's biggest stars in the 1960s and 70s, has died. He had been carrying on a brave public battle against Alzheimer's disease. He died at the age of 81. He was born dirt poor in Arkansas, and he learned to play the guitar as a child. He later joined his uncle's country band in New Mexico and appeared in local radio before forming his own group and moving to Los Angeles. I'm Tommy McNeil in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Wednesday, August the 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you. South Africa's embattled President Jacob Zuma survived a no-confidence vote in Parliament.
The total votes, 384. The yes, 177. The no, 198. And there were 9 abstentions. And therefore, the motion of no confidence in the president is accordingly negative.
South Africa's Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete announcing the results from the no confidence vote. And in Kenya, early results show the incumbent president Uhuru Kenyatta with a lead in a highly contested election. However, his opponent Raila Odinga rejected the preliminary results, calling them, quote, fictitious.
We therefore reject all the results streamed so far and demand that the IEBC produces Form 34As from all the polling stations before any further results are announced.
Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga speaking at a news conference a few hours ago. And a new report from the European Council on Foreign Affairs highlights how cooperation between Sahel and Maghreb countries could improve the migrant and human smuggling issues facing Africa and Europe. Those stories and more are coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. In Kenya, early results show that the incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta took an early and significant lead over longtime opposition leader Raila Odinga. The Electoral Commission's website says that with more than 10 million ballots counted, Kenyatta was leading with 55% of the vote against Raila Odinga's 44%, a difference of more than 1.1 million ballots. However, Mr. Odinga rejected the results, saying in a news conference that the results were, quote, fictitious, they are fake, end quote.
I've been streaming results from around the country which are not supported by Form 334A, as is strictly required by the law. To resolve this issue, the National Coalition has held a meeting with the IEBC, during which the IEBC acknowledged the fact that the results as displayed are based on only on keyed-in results that are not supported by any evidence of the tally of votes. A clean, credible process. We now have a dashboard showing all tallies from all constituencies to add to a sum total so that the country can know which part of the country has been counted and what the votes are. We therefore reject all the results streamed so far and demand that the IEBC produces Form 34As from all the polling stations before any further results are announced.
Kenya's opposition leader Raila Odinga speaking at a news conference a few hours ago. Kenya's Electoral Commission says that over 26,000 of the country's more than 41,000 polling stations had reported in, but millions of the votes were still to be counted. Pundits say that the contest between Kenyatta and Odinga is expected to be close after a hard-fought contest between the East African country's two foremost political families. Opinion polls released last week had put the two candidates neck and neck. Campaigning was marked by fiery rhetoric, but public speeches were largely free of the ethnic hatred that had marred previous contests as the two men faced off for a second time. And in South Africa, President Jacob Zuma survived an attempt in Parliament to force him from office on Tuesday. Zuma, who has been in power since 2009, secured 198 votes to the opposition's 177 in a no-confidence motion held by secret ballot as loyal ANC lawmakers rallied to his support. A successful vote would have required President Zuma and his entire cabinet to resign. South Africa's Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete announced the results.
The total votes, 384. The yes, 177. The no, 198. And there were 9 abstentions. And therefore, the motion of no confidence in the president is accordingly negatived.
South Africa Assembly Speaker Baleka Mbete announcing the results of the no confidence vote in President Jacob Zuma. From Johannesburg, South Africa, I reached reporter Nadia Sami, who, like many South Africans, were closely following the process. Now, Nadia, yesterday was what you would call a nail-biting day in South African politics.
It certainly was, Jackson. It was down to the wire and it could have gone either way. In the end, President Jacob Zuma survived an 8th motion of no confidence vote. But this time around, he does emerge as a slightly more bruised figure. The outcome, after 384 votes were cast in secret, is as follows. 177 MPs voted that Zuma must go. 198 MPs voted that Zuma should remain in office, while there were 9 abstentions. Now, given that the opposition collectively has 151 seats in the National Assembly, this means around 26 ANC MPs voted against their own leader, and that's significant. That really should be the big takeout for Zuma and the ANC. While the party is celebrating victory, it's also faced with the reality of increasing voices of dissent within its own ranks. Make no mistake, while this was a win for the governing party, it was by a very, very narrow margin.
Now, Nadia, it's no doubt that members of the opposition and some people in the general public were not pleased with the vote. What has been their reaction so far?
Opposition parties are vowing to continue the fight, Jackson. The leader of the Economic Freedom Fighters, Julius Malema, says they're eating away at the ANC elephant bit by bit. He was quite emboldened last night by the fact that around 26 ANC MPs voted with the opposition, and he says this was just the beginning, that the tide is turning. The leader of the Democratic Alliance, Musi Maimane, saying the outcome is proof that Zuma's own party wants him out of power. Now, the ANC's alliance partner, the SA Communist Party, says this should be a massive wake-up call, and it's now calling for an urgent meeting to take action against the president, to have a meeting amongst the alliance partners to discuss the way forward. Now, here's the kicker. The local currency, the rand, tanked on the news that President Jacob Zuma has survived yet another motion of no confidence. The rand plunged from 13 rand 39 cents to the dollar to 13 rand 11 cents to the US dollar. That was almost immediately on the news. Several stalwarts, Jackson, and party elders have for months now been speaking out against Zuma's leadership, against corruption, and calling on Zuma to step down or to be removed as the head of the party.
What about President Zuma? Like you say, yesterday, this was not his first rodeo. How did he react to this motion of no confidence in his leadership and the fact that he emerged victorious?
Well, Zuma came out to address his supporters in Cape Town last night, shortly after the results of the vote were announced. He thanked them. He told them that the ANC is powerful, that it cannot be taken down. He appeared to boast about surviving a vote of no confidence for the 8th time. He emphasized to the crowd that this was the 8th time Parliament has held a no confidence vote against him. He was quite jolly. He was cracking jokes with a crowd. And he wrapped up his appearance out there in Cape Town by singing and rather energetically dancing on the stage and really charming all of those who had come out to support him. And that is the type of figure he is. President Jacob Zuma is a very charming character, and he was in true form last night as he addressed his supporters. Now, it must be noted that the crowds that came out to cheer him on were significantly smaller than the crowds that came out during the course of the day calling for his resignation.
And in fact, the day started out on a very different note, right? There were several protests.
Yes, Jackson. Ahead of the vote on Tuesday morning, there were protests countrywide. Protesters rallied under the cry, Zuma must fall, Zuma must fall. At a protest outside Parliament on Tuesday morning, where the vote took place, pro-Zuma supporters found themselves side to side with those calling for the president's removal. Now, political and religious leaders also addressed the crowds there, and they appealed to MPs to vote for the best of the country. Well, once proceedings got underway in the National Assembly, there was heated debate both for and against President Jacob Zuma. ANC MPs repeatedly claimed that this is an attempt at regime change. The opposition swiftly countered this, saying it's a constitutional legal process that has been mandated by the court. The opposition arguing that President Zuma has violated the constitution, that all MPs must do the right thing by voting him out of office. Now, fast forward a few hours later, they didn't manage to do that, but the significance of this day and the way that MPs voted is something that will provide food for thought for the governing party and its opposition for some time to come.
Nadia Sami is a reporter based in Johannesburg, South Africa. A new report from the European Council on Foreign Affairs highlights how cooperation between Sahel and Maghreb countries could improve the migrant and human smuggling issues facing Africa and Europe. The report's author, Andrew Leibovich, a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations, spoke to Ricky Shryok about his findings.
But so when you crack down on some of these trades and just crack down without providing other alternatives, it deprives these communities of major sources of income. And especially in the last couple of years, migration has become a huge source of income in Agadez and in the wider region in northern Niger. And so there's a lot of an economics problem and a problem of actually supporting these communities who now have seen their incomes reduced and have seen the possibilities for making a living reduced. These approaches that only privilege security, so the repression of migration, or the suppression of migration, I should say, also completely fail to understand why it is that people are moving. And so if you're just trying to tamp down migration without trying to understand why people move within the region, how they move within the region, and why sometimes they try to move out of the region, then you're not actually improving the situation.
You said that legal migration between the Sahel and the Maghreb would diminish illegal migration flows into Europe by creating a larger and more effective internal African labor market. For instance, when I was in Agadez recently, I met some people who either had family working in Libya or expressed interest in actually simply stopping in Libya if they could find work there. What do you see as the opportunities for this kind of migration from Sahel countries to Algeria, Libya, Tunisia?
I think this is a challenge on the one hand, especially in a place like Algeria, where the internal politics around migration right now are very complicated, and there are large parts of the government that have said disparaging things about migrants that don't want to legalize the status of migrants. The mega economies, particularly Algeria, but also Morocco and Tunisia, are looking to diversify their economies. They're looking to grow their economies. And so our belief is that there's a possibility here, a potential for increased investment as a way of generating economic opportunity, and then migrant labor is often necessary. So this is a way that if we're talking about things that the EU can do, that Europe can do, that the international community can do, financing projects and trying to encourage better and more regularized labor market within the region and labor movement within the region can help create a safer environment for migrants, a more protected environment for migrants.
You talk about observers in northern Niger and northern Mali noted a small but important increase in migrant trafficking through Mali, which, as you said, is an indication of the continued passage of migrants and the willingness of migrants and traffickers to risk travel through unstable areas. Do you think it's also kind of a sign that if you close off one route, another route will just open up?
Yeah, I think that's certainly one of the indications of the anecdotal evidence. And so that does suggest absolutely that people will take other routes. They will try to find other ways of getting either to the Maghreb or getting to Europe.
That was Andrew Leibovich, a visiting fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. He was speaking to Ricky Shryok from Dakar. And in Malawi, researchers are experimenting on pesticides that would help to combat the fall armyworms, which have destroyed crops in most parts of this southern African country. Agriculture experts say that the worms now become resistant to long-used pesticide cypermethrin. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Malawi government statistics show that over 140,000 hectares of maize fields and millet have been destroyed across the country since the invasion of armyworms earlier this year. About 40,000 hectares have been destroyed in this year's winter cropping season, affecting 600,000 farmers. Armyworms are caterpillars that feed on green pastures and cereal crops like maize, a staple food in Malawi. Donald Gajigamba is an entomologist at Vumbwe Agriculture Research Station. He says so far about 5 pesticides have proven effective. These include Belt 48SC, Cropilophos 48SC, and Stuart.
They are eliminating, like in the plots where we have treated, we have applied these pesticides, found that there are no 4 armyworms. So it means they are working against this pest.
The findings follow a research which scientists from the Ministry of Agriculture embarked in May this year. Farmers say this is good news as they have long struggled to control the worms, which forced many to resort to using traditional methods of killing the pests. Meanwhile, the government has procured a pesticide known as Dasban, which was banned in the U.S. 17 years ago. The agriculture ministry officials say they have procured 10,000 liters of Dasban pesticide to be distributed to farmers throughout the country. This has, however, worried observers who says other countries banned the pesticide because of its side effects on humans. Environmental Protection Agency, or EPA, officially began the process of removing Dasban and Roseban in 2000 from the consumer marketplace in the USA. EPA said the pesticides were known to cause potential nervous system and brain damage to young people. But Gajigamba allays those fears.
Dasban is not banned here in Malawi. It may be banned in other countries. It depends on the country's policies. So as of now, Dasban is not banned here in Malawi, and it is effective on the 4 MOM.
Chairperson for Parliamentary Committee on Agriculture, Chidanti Malunga, told a local radio that they are meeting the Malawi government authorities this week to discuss the procurement of the banned pesticide. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
Uganda's opposition says they will continue to campaign against proposals aimed at amending the constitution that includes removal of age limit as a requirement for standing for president in the country. Seranda Gerald Blacks, the deputy secretary general of the Democratic Party of Uganda, says their campaigns are aimed at ensuring there is a peaceful transition of power in Uganda. From Kampala, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji files this report.
Senior members of the ruling party, the National Resistance Movement, or NRM party, said this Monday that their party had not sanctioned debates about age limit removal. They said those agitating for it are in fact destroying the unity of their party. But opposition leader Dr. Seranda insists the ruling party is just trying to buy time before they embark on age limit removal project. While addressing journalists in Uganda's capital Kampala yesterday, Seranda says President Museveni must come out and tell Ugandans he is not going to contest in the coming presidential elections.
President Museveni and his team are only trying to play an offside game. Then we play an offside trap and they will score when we do not know. What we are trying to say is immunization. We are trying to immunize Ugandans. We are trying to safeguard. And safeguarding is a work of political parties, and we are doing a political work that we have to do 24/7 a year. So I do not want to take the ones from the president, and he has not come up to deny, purely to deny.
Uganda's constitution sets the age range to contest for president at 35-75 years of age. President Museveni has been in power since 1986 and is serving what is supposed to be his last 5-year term of office that ends in 2021. Seranda says their campaign, dubbed Toji Kwatako Drive, which means do not dare touch Article 102B of the Constitution that splits age requirement for anyone intending to contest for Uganda's presidency, will take place not only in Kampala City but other parts of the country. He says the campaign is non-partisan and is calling on Ugandans from all walks of life to join.
We are saying you business people, the people in the arcades, without proper governance, all those arcades will collapse in one day. and we don't want to go to that side.
Seranda says his party is trying to ensure that President Museveni puts a good precedent by peacefully handing over power to the next leader through an election.
This is the golden opportunity that we have. We only have one bullet in the chamber. We want our president to retire peacefully, to go and look after his cows, to go and start memorial institutions. We want to have a history in this country. We are tired of seeing leaders that after power, they go to exile. They are only brought back for funeral and burial.
The Democratic Party of Uganda said this Thursday as a day when they will stage protests against constitution amendments. For VOA News, I am Mugume Devs Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And New York is one of the most ethnically diverse cities in the world. Each migrant group offers its own unique music, dance, and theater, and other artistic traditions. Recently, leaders from dozens of these groups created the Immigrants Arts Coalition, or ISC. The ISC will allow immigrant art organizations to share resources and to showcase their multicultural talents. VOA's Adam Phillips attended a concert celebrating the birth of the league and files this report.
It's twilight on a perfect summer evening in Battery Park on the banks of the Hudson River in Lower Manhattan. And the America, the Golden Land Band kicks things off with a Jewish klezmer melody. Behind the band, perhaps a kilometer away, the Statue of Liberty serenely watches over New York Harbor. This is deeply meaningful to the audience here. Many are first or second generation immigrants. Most are painfully aware of the anti-immigrant sentiments currently at play in much of the United States. All seemed heartened by the creation today of the Immigrant Arts Coalition, which this concert celebrates.
So Zeltan and Gelegenheit, an opportunity of a lifetime.
Watch your step, strike my license plain. Watch your step, you know I'll make you
insane. The entertainment begins with Watch Your Step, the opening production number from America, the Golden Land. It's the hit musical now showing nearby at the National Yiddish Theater, Volksbühne. The Volksbühne is a key organizer of the Immigrant Arts Coalition. Sung in both English and Yiddish, Watch Your Step conveys the struggle, the frenzy, and the promise of immigrant life a century ago.
This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island.
So what better song to round out the Immigrants Art Concert than with This Land Is Your Land? Almost every American knows the classic patriotic protest song Woody Guthrie penned back in 1940. Guthrie was a tireless political activist for workers, migrants, and all the downtrodden. David Lutgun, who plays the Guthrie character in Woody Says, his show at the Irish Repertory Company, sings it here.
Of the steeple by the relief office, I saw my people.
He says that Guthrie always championed tolerance, inclusion, and celebration as essential American values. He added that, then as now, respecting immigrants, their heritage, and their gifts is key to the nation's success and happiness. Adam Phillips, VOA News, New York.
This land was made for you. Play one, Darcy, go ahead.
And that's it for this Wednesday, August 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending the morning with us. Join us again tomorrow for more African news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Shryok, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you all a good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next, Straight Talk Africa, an in-depth review and discussion on the electoral process and results of the presidential elections in Rwanda and Kenya. Election fever in East Africa. On the next, Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.